providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. As promised, second half of the weekend edition of the KE Report. We're focused on the energy sector as we are chatting with Dan Steffens, president of the Energy Prospectus Group. Now, Dan, we're going to start more macro, looking at some of the data around oil and natural gas, and then filter that back down into the companies and a couple stocks that you always like to share with us. Let's start with oil, because when we were chatting last month, we do chat on a monthly basis, oil was breaking out. It was above $80. We might have actually talked right around the high of that move at $83.50. And, well, over the last few weeks, oil has moved back down. It even temporarily broke down below that $70 level, more of the trading range that oil has been in for about 6 months now. And as we're recording this, about half the way through the day on Wednesday, oil's in the low 70s, about $72 a barrel. Dan, what's causing this weakness in the oil price, or should we just really be looking at this market as much like all the other markets that are simply range bound?
Yeah, it's if you look at a 6 month chart of West Texas Intermediate prices, they've traded between a high of 90 at the beginning of that 6 months, got down to below 70. And then the last time we talked was probably just a few days after OPEC Plus announced that they were going to cut production by 1.16 million barrels a day. And Russia also said they're going to cut production by 500,000 barrels a day. And that sent the price of oil, that caused a short covering rally in the futures market, which sent the price up to 83. It took a while for that to calm down. That was probably a little bit too high. But my take right now is the right price for oil is about 80 is where it should be. But what's going on right now is there's so much fear in the market of recession. I mean, this has got to be the most advertised recession in the history of recessions. They talk about it constantly. Then we've got this in the U.S. We've got these conversations about raising or not raising the debt limit. And, oh, my God, we're default on our debt. No way. They're going to do it. So that will pass. But I don't know why they call them budget meetings. They ought to be called crazy spending conferences or something, because it's insane how much money we're spending that we don't have anyway. But the fundamentals, I mean, I looked at Wednesday's EIA petroleum report, and they did report a small 3 million barrel increase in our crude oil inventories. But, you know, that's nothing compared to the overall inventory. And our inventory is actually 1% below the five-year average for this time of year. We're at like 462 million barrels in inventory, but our inventory will hold over 600 million barrels. So they're not close to any kind of glut, that's for sure. And then you look at refined products, and they're all way below where they should be. Gasoline inventories, they declined by another 3.2 million barrels, and we're 7% below the five-year average. Then you look at distillates, which this time of year is primarily diesel fuel, it declined by another 4.2 million barrels, and we're at 16% below the five-year average. So when you look at total petroleum inventories in the U.S. and the OECD, they're all below where they should be for this time of year. And your listeners need to remember, this world, the modern world, runs on diesel, and we really have a global shortage of diesel, which is why, you know, if you pass gas stations, the price of diesel is much higher than the price of gasoline, because there really is an ongoing, very low period, a shortage of it all over the country.
Yeah, Dan, that story isn't even getting enough traction like it should in the media, because it's going to affect the trucking and freight industry. It's going to affect inflation. It's going to affect the price of shipping goods around and mailing packages. And it's the cost that other companies have to get their goods in time. So that diesel story is a big story. But when you talked just in the opening comments there, you made some great points about how it's a dynamic market, the oil market, and there's so many forces pulling at people, the debt ceiling, inflation, what's the CPI report going to be, inventory builds, all of these things are coming into it. But it seemed like the thing that moved the needle the most over the last couple months was the OPEC meeting and just their messaging. And I've heard a lot of people come out and say, hey, OPEC may talk tough with Russia and Saudi Arabia saying they're going to cut, but there's actually a buildup of tankers in the as far as the Russian shipping oil, and they're probably going to produce just as much as ever. What's your take on that as far as the OPEC messaging and, I guess, fact versus fiction?
Well, number one, OPEC Plus, which includes Russia, they're in control of the world's oil price. They can make it go where they want to. I mean, there's nobody else holding back production. And then the last IEA report, that's the International Energy Agency based in Paris, their conclusion was that all petroleum inventories are tight now, and they see a significant supply deficit coming just months ahead. We are headed into the highest demand period of the year. June through September is the highest demand period for transportation fuels. And also think about this. Diesel is used by farmers. I mean, we have to plant food and harvest food, and we're in the planting period now, wheat and corn and all this stuff. And it takes diesel to run all that farm equipment. It takes diesel to run drilling equipment. My wife and I drove from Houston on Highway 10 over to Louisiana and spent about 4 or 5 hours on Highway 10. And I can tell you, it was a steady stream of 18-wheelers going the other way, both ways, really. And I'm telling you, diesel demand isn't coming down anytime soon because we still have supply chain problems that have to be fixed. I mean, the country runs on diesel, and that's all there is to it. So I see much higher prices by the end of the year. After that OPEC meeting was over, Goldman Sachs raised their Brent forecast $5 to $95 by the fourth quarter. Raymond James put out a report that said it would be WTI would be 95 by the end of the third quarter and 105 sometime in the fourth quarter. So a lot of the Wall Street gang is seeing this. And the only thing that would cause prices not to go high would be a global recession. If we have a mild recession in the U.S., and I don't know how you have a major recession when you have high employment, when everybody that wants a job has a job, that's not, you know, some kind of depression or something. And people got jobs, they're still going to be buying stuff. They're going to still be taking vacations and things. So demand for these petroleum products is not going down that I can see anytime soon.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you there, Dan, is what would a recession do to the price? But hey, it all depends what kind of recession we have, right? Because everyone's looking forward to the second half of this year saying a recession is coming. What about natural gas, though? Oil, look, it's been range-bound, but it is still hanging around that, let's just say, $70 to $80 range. When we look at natural gas, man, that's still holding just above $2, and it's just not moving. It's stuck at this level. When is that going to start moving? And is it going to move down before it moves up?
No, I think we're probably at the bottom. The second quarter is always kind of the low demand period for natural gas. It's called the shoulder season in between the winter and the cooling, the air conditioned season in the summer. So we are getting large builds into the storage, but the storage isn't even close to full. I mean, we're like, you know, 2 TCF in storage, and storage will hold like 4.2 TCF. So that's not a problem. The upstream companies that I follow that are focused on gas, they are laying down rigs. They're not going to complete a bunch of wells. These high rate shale wells come on very strong, and you'd be stupid to complete them into a $2 gas price market. And I do want to remind you, you know, where the oil price is now at $70, $75. These companies are very profitable in the oil business at that price. So it's not like they can't make money at $70, but the pure gas companies, when you get, I follow four very large companies, Comstock, which is a Haynesville company I really like long-term, but it is a pure gas. 99% of their production is dry gas from East Texas and the Haynesville play in Louisiana. EQT is the largest natural gas future company in North America. Now, they look really good. If you're a long-term investor and you want to add some exposure to natural gas in your portfolio, I recommend EQT, not only because of its size. It is by far the largest natural gas producer in North America with over 5 billion cubic feet per day of production. That's going to go to 6 here when they close an acquisition they're working on. And then I like Range Resources, which also has about 30% of their production as liquids. So I like that. Antero sold off significantly, but their balance sheet's in great shape. They use all these companies use significant cash flow last year to pay off a lot of debt. Their balance sheets are in good shape, and they can survive an extended period of low prices. But I don't really think we're going to see the big surge. I think what's going to happen is there's going to be a reset of the price range for natural gas once we get all these big LNG export facilities online. And they start coming online at the end of 2024. It's going to be like every other month, a new, very large LNG export facility is going to be coming online. And we're going to take our total export capacity that's about 20 BCF a day now. It's like 14 BCF a day by LNG facilities and another 6 BCF a day, 6 to 8 BCF a day by pipelines into Mexico and Eastern Canada. And that is going to double it by now. Between now and 2027, our export capacity is going to be double. And then the global price of natural gas will have much more influence on the domestic price of natural gas. And I believe that the price range will go to about 1/10 the price of oil. On the global market, the price of gas is determined by its energy content, and therefore it trades at about 1/6 the price of oil. And right now, the gas prices in Europe and Asia are $12 per MCF, which compares to our $2.25 per MCF because, you know, just take the price of oil, divide by 6, and you're going to be very close to the global price. So if we get even halfway, if our gas companies start getting $5 or $6 per MCF, I can tell you the ones I just mentioned are going to be extremely profitable at that price.
Yeah, Dan, that's what I was thinking as you were talking. Heck, even if net gas prices just doubled to $4.50, those companies would move. But if it gets to where it's 1/10 of the oil price, let's just say $7 to $8, that would be a huge move in those companies, a eye-popping move. But we're going to have to wait and see how that plays out and see what happens in the nat gas prices. Appreciate you sharing those companies. But let's talk about some of the oily stocks, because right now they are making good money in the mid-70s, and a lot of them could weather the storm down into the 50s if they needed to. So which companies at these prices and at the projected possibly higher prices by the end of the year really are getting your attention here in the market, Dan?
Well, one that I like, and it's a fairly new name. It's really was created by a merger of a private company into a public company. The name of it is Permian Resources, and the symbol is PR. It's not a small cap. This is a mid-cap company. Their first quarter production was 153,000 barrels per day. That's a pretty decent size. And they have a clear path to 200,000 barrels per day. I think their production is going to be up about 10 or 15% this year, and they've got some of the best acreage in the Delaware Basin, which is the western half of the Permian Basin. A lot of their acreage is in New Mexico and the far western side of the Permian, but it's they're completing some really good wells, and they got a lot of running room. And they actually just completed a small acquisition that adds dozens of high-quality drilling locations. I just finished writing or looking at it hard this morning and updating my valuation. And I think the stock's trading at about $10 or just under $10. And my valuation is like $16.50. And I see upside to that number, really, if they keep hitting all their targets. Another one I really like, and another company that's grown by acquisitions, is Earthstone. I've mentioned it before on your show. Its symbol is ESTE. Their first quarter results beat my forecast. They're at 104,000 barrels a day of production. It also has grown through a series of acquisitions. It doesn't really have the analyst coverage that it should have for a company of that size. And I just think it's unnoticed. They've agreed they're going to host a luncheon for us in Houston. We have public companies that host luncheons to get in front of our group. And it's going to draw a big crowd in June. I like Callon Petroleum. The stock just continues to trade, and it's a very profitable company, continues to trade at a big discount to my valuation at less than half. And another one like that is Vital Energy, which is based in Tulsa. And I think the fact that it's in Tulsa doesn't get the analysts don't want to make that trip up to Tulsa from Houston, I guess. But it's a new name. It used to be called Laredo Petroleum, and now it's called Vital Energy, VTLE. Then another one that's production is split pretty evenly, or its revenues are split evenly between natural gas and oil, is Silverbow. but I talked to management and they were going to drill and complete a bunch of gas wells this year, but they moved both of their drilling rigs are now, and they're continuing to have two rigs running all year. They're drilling in their more oily acreage. So they are going to significantly increase their oil production, probably double it from what it was last year over the next 12 months, because they're just going to be drilling and completing oil wells this year.
So Dan, when you're looking at companies in the growth sense here, do you like more of these acquisitions? I was hearing a lot of these companies have grown through acquisitions. Do you prefer the acquisition front, or do you like that organic project growth?
Well, I like both. And when they make an acquisition, I want them to be buying a lot of undeveloped acreage, a lot of further drilling locations, so they can continue to grow by through the drill bit, not just through acquisitions. I mean, if all you're doing is buying companies that are fully drilled out, and so that, you know, their production is going to go on decline, they have no more development upside, I don't like that. Those companies might be best suited for some of the Canadian dividend payers. You know, they might buy those companies and just, you know, use that cash flow to pay dividends. But I want the combination of growth plus income. That's for sure. And that's what Wall Street wants. Now, some of these growth companies, especially the smaller ones, they don't pay dividends yet, I don't think. No, Earthstone does not pay a dividend yet. I do expect them to announce one pretty soon that should help. Vital doesn't pay a dividend, neither does Silver Bow. So they are growth companies. And right now, but they are free. They're free cash flow. It's not that they don't have the cash flow. All their growth is being funded internally, and they could pay dividends, but they've got so much good acreage to develop. They're more focused on increasing their production and proven reserves.
Well, Dan, rather than looking at it from the angle of how these companies can grow through acquisition, what about the other side of that table where there's companies that look like good takeover candidates, not just some of these smaller growth companies that they could bolt on, but also we've seen some in the private companies being acquired. Maybe just speak to who's on the menu as far as who could be a good takeover candidate.
Oh, yeah. Permian Resources could be a great takeover candidate. Vital, for sure. I guess if somebody was going in. Now, Comstock, that company is controlled by Jerry Jones, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys. He owns controlling interest there. So it won't be taken over unless Jerry wants to sell it. That's for sure. Hell, some of them are just buying themselves. The one thing I noticed, Diamondback Energy, which is one of my all-time favorites and an all-time great American success story, it was paying a pretty high dividend. Well, it cut its dividend because it said it's doubling its stock buyback program to $4 billion. This is a company that only has a market cap of about $15 billion, and it announces a $4 billion stock repurchase plan, and that announcement didn't even move the stock at all. I don't know what this market wants, but what that tells you is the board of directors thinks their stock is so grossly undervalued that their best investment is just to buy their own stock.
That's crazy. That is it's buyback. Why aren't they out there buying other companies?
Well, they could be, yeah, but Diamondback has a whole bunch of acreage to develop itself, and they're running a bunch of rigs. They're running like 10 rigs. They're one of the most active drilling companies in the Permian Basin. It's a pure Permian Basin company. I'm telling you, it's an all-time American success story. This company, if you go back 5 or 6 years ago, it didn't even exist. And now it's up to like 250,000 barrels a day of production. It's a really nice company. And we're going to be publishing a detailed profile on it. And it also spun off its mineral interest into another company called Viper Energy, which is a pure minerals company that pays very nice dividends. So if you have listeners that are looking for dividends, look at Viper Energy. Its symbol is VNOM, Venom. They used to have a company called Rattler, and they reversed it back into the company. They spun it off first, and then 2 years later, reversed it back into the company.
Well, that's an interesting take on it, too, and a way to get some dividends from a snake company, people that are doing Rattlers and Venom. But one of the other things that is interesting in the oil and nat gas space is how everybody's been focused on stock buybacks and dividends and, you know, paying down the debt. But it doesn't seem like the growth wedge gets as much attention in today's, you know, from analysts or from investors How important is a company having a solid growth wedge to you when you're looking at some of these companies?
Well, it's actually important for the United States to have more of a growth view. We're not even close to getting back to where we were pre-pandemic. We were producing 13 million barrels a day, and we're still at like 12.3 million barrels a day. And we're not going to get back to it this year, and probably not going to get back to it next year. The companies are focused on just slow growth, maintaining their, dividends and stuff, but because that's what investors in Wall Street seems to want. And then you got this paradigm out there that, you know, we're all going to be driving electric cars in a few years and not need this stuff anymore. And I can assure you there's nothing that is more far from the truth than that. Oil demand, even coal demand, is projected to go up year after year for at least like 25, 30 years.
So, Dan, when you're looking at companies, are there any red flags that draw you away from them? Because we're always talking on the positive, what you like, what you're interested in. What about what you don't like, or what scares you away from certain companies?
Well, you definitely would need to focus on the balance sheet, and you need to look at their debt. Now, all debt's not the same. So if you look at a company, their senior debt, if they have some that's coming due next year, that, you know, they're not going to be able to pay it off. I mean, let's say, you know, they got a $100 million senior note or something, notes that have to be paid off next year, and they don't have that kind of deal. If they don't have a good banking relationship to be able to refinance that debt, they're kind of in trouble then. That's the most exposure. So I like to see the debt schedule. I also like to see these companies that have a really big undrawn revolver. So that if something, you know, this is a very capital intensive business. And if, you know, if there's a big drop in the price, they need access to capital to survive. And, you know, you can't just slam on the brakes for your drilling program overnight. So, you know, that's what happened at the beginning of COVID. These guys had long-term drilling contracts they couldn't get out of for a while. And it did push some into bankruptcy. But they're in so much better shape. I spoke at a conference on Sunday, May the 7th up in Dallas. Well, there was 160 people at this. It was all private companies talking about their drilling programs. And for your listeners, in the United States, it's like 30 or 40% of our wells are drilled by private companies, not all by public companies. So that's these big drilling programs down here. But all of us agreed on this panel that the industry itself is in so much better shape than it should be. And when you look at that energy is only about 5% of the S&P 500, you know, as well as these companies are doing, they should be back where it used to be, where energy was like 15 to 16% of the S&P 500, but it's not even close. It's not these, their multiples they're trading at are just crazy, which is why I think half of the ones I look at are screaming takeover targets.
Well, Dan, just one more on the potential red flags. I don't know if this is a red flag or just kind of a neutral flag, but I noticed there's a lot of companies that have done a great job, to your point, paying down the debt. Some of them are almost debt-free at this point. They've done some dividends. They've done some share buybacks. But it seems like there's a lot of them that have drilled out their wells. They're coasting along. Times are good. But I don't see them having any key catalysts to move them forward. And it seems like they've plateaued. And I can think of a lot of companies that have gotten to this point where they look good economically. They're operationally doing good. But I just don't see what the next step is to take them to the next level. Do you see that as being a potential red flag of sorts?
Yeah, that could be. And, you know, the one company that doesn't have much running room that I like, and I talked to the CEO the other day, was Hemisphere Energy, and they only got about 14, 16 more drilling locations. But they are still continuing, and they have 2 years more of production growth before they would plateau. And I do know they are looking to make another acquisition, but they are 100% debt free. They've paid off all their interest bearing debt. They've got massive cash flow. They pay nice dividends. You know, it's a great place to park some money. And if they can just get some more, I call it running room. These assets are depleting assets. So all oil fields, all oil wells, when you drill them, they produce at a higher rate at the beginning. Then you have a decline rate. And especially on the shale wells, you know, after they drill that horizontal well, they frack the hell out of it and it comes on really strong. And, those wells can produce 30 to 40% of all the oil they're ever going to produce in the first year. And then they, you know, go on decline. Now they're very economic because they pay out in like 6 or 8 months at this price, but they have to keep the rigs running. They have to keep drilling more wells to maintain their production and even more to increase their production. And one thing to remember, if you're, if you're growing through acquisition, that does not increase the United States or Canada's production. That just moves production from one company to another, or from a private company into a public company. That doesn't increase the nation. So the underinvestment in oil and gas is what got this world into an energy crisis, and that has not been resolved. And IEA and OPEC have continued to warn the world that underinvestment and exploration and production is going to lead to energy shortages in the very near future. As really, it could be within 6 or 8 months, we could be in a supply deficit situation.
All right, Dan, we'll wrap it up here. Thank you very much for joining us on this weekend show. As a special mention, too, if you are interested in signing up for the Energy Prospectus Group, Dan is providing all of you listening a $100 discount by using the discount code CF100. I will post that within this weekend show posting, and that $100 savings is for that $350 subscription per year. So that is a significant savings, and you get to keep up to date with Dan's thoughts on the energy market and all the research he does on a wide range of energy companies, all focused for you, the investor. So Dan, thank you for providing that offer to our listeners. We will chat again next month. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend. Thank you everybody for tuning in. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
All right. Thanks a lot.